WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Several years ago, George Brown set up an investment banking firm that kept him in the air between San Francisco, New York, London, Frankfurt, Tokyo, and Sydney. He says he's logged over 1 million miles in air travel. Brown's acquired survival skills are collected in his new book, The Airline Passenger's Guerrilla Handbook, Strategies and Tactics for Beating the Air Travel System. He offers advice on everything from finding the cheapest airfares and accumulating frequent flyer miles to beating jet lag and avoiding being sucked out of airplane doors. I asked George Brown about a flying concern of mine. How do you avoid getting stuck with a non-refundable ticket?
You shouldn't worry quite as much about non-refundability. Mm-hmm. There are things that you can do. For example, technically the tickets shouldn't be transferable to other people. But the airlines don't really enforce this provision, at least on domestic flights. They don't check your identity when you come in with a ticket. On international flights, they have to check your identity because of the passport.
Passports, yeah.
That's right. And if you look in the back of the Sunday paper, you find there's a lot of people advertising non-refundable tickets that they don't want anymore for sale. And the surprising thing is that if the 21-day advance purchase date has elapsed, you can actually sell your non-refundable ticket to somebody for more than you paid for it, because their alternative is to buy a much more expensive ticket because the 21-day advance purchase period has already elapsed. Also, the airlines will allow refundability or at least switching flights in many situations if you've got a good reason. At some airlines, if the person you're flying with is ill, or if you're ill and you have to get a doctor's certificate on this, or if somebody dies that you're flying with, or if you have a legal requirement that you've been subpoenaed in court or that sort of thing, or you've got jury duty, the airlines will allow you to get a refund or to cancel. In addition, many of the airlines now have introduced new fares, which they will allow you to change one leg of your trip for no payment or a nominal payment.
When I fly, I'm always terrified that I'll never see my clothes again. You know, that they'll take my baggage and like that'll be it.
I assume you mean the clothes in the bag.
Right? Oh, exactly. But do you have any methods of either making connecting flights or checking your baggage to help ensure that you'll see it again when you arrive?
Sure. The best way not to lose your bag is to never check it. And I don't check my bags. I'm on a 5-week tour now in this book, and I'm traveling purely with carry-on. And I think anybody can travel with carry-on if they take a little planning. You just don't want to get stuck in what I call the tragedy of checked luggage. You know what I mean? You've seen these people staggering through the airport with more bags in hands, you know, looking for a check-in line that's less than 250 yards long, you know, or they're waiting up half the night in the baggage claim, you know, waiting for the mechanical luggage eater to puke up their half-destroyed bag, you know. Or maybe on a flight from London to New York, they discover that their bag's been routed by way of Waco, Texas, which one person I talked to actually had that problem. And they finally got their bag back 3 weeks later, and it had all these custom stamps, you know, it had gone all over the world trying to find where they were. But that's the first thing. Don't check your bags. And I think it can be done. Most experienced travelers don't. They travel with an underseat suitcase and a garment bag, and that's good enough for anything.
Okay, say, though, you're taking a connecting flight.
Mm-hmm.
Would you feel more concerned that you'll be losing your baggage on that connecting flight than you would if you were just taking one plane?
Sure, and also on an inter-airline connecting flight, you're much more likely to lose your bag than on an online connecting flight.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got different baggage systems, and the baggage handlers are supposedly less concerned about bags going to other flights than their own.
Have you ever been bumped on an overbooked plane?
Oh, sure, yeah.
How does that work? It's never happened to me.
It hasn't. Oh.
No.
Well, you only have...
I don't get to get away that often.
It's about 1 out of 500 chance that you'll be bumped on average. You can increase your chances by going after those airlines who overbook. That information is published by the DOT each month, you can tell. When you look at who's been bumped, both voluntary and involuntarily, they'll tell you how they're overbooked. It's a difficult thing to avoid. I mean, the easiest way to avoid it is to, one, get a pre-assigned seating. That'll give you priority over everybody else. And a pre-issued boarding pass. The second thing is to get to the airport early if you're concerned about the flight. being full.
For those of us who like to have as much room to ourselves as we can get, you have some, I think, cunning tricks for making sure the seat next to you is empty.
Yes, some of them are probably a little too devious, but the first thing to do is to look how planes are filled up. In the old days, they used to fill planes, scattered passengers throughout the planes. And then some airline did a study and discovered that really the only people who benefited by this were the passengers. So they immediately abolished that practice. So now they tend to fill the planes up from the front to the back, cramming everybody up front unless you specifically ask. So the back of the plane will be less likely to be filled than the front. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the center section of a wide body is less likely to be filled. It would be filled last, so you're more likely to get space there if you get an aisle seat in the center section.
This is because people like window views?
Yes, inexperienced passengers particularly like window views. Experienced passengers like the aisle. Because the aisle, you can get your bags, get out fast, and get up quickly without having to stagger over everybody else. Apart from that, if you ask your travel agent, they should have which seats have been blocked out on the plane for staff, for airline staff. And these are usually fairly empty because the staff are up and about serving passengers. And if you can sit next to staff, that's a good one.
This is one of the great mysteries to me when I fly. What do you do when you need the restroom and one of the stewardesses or stewards is serving and they've got this huge tray that takes up the whole aisle and you need to get by?
Well, gee, I don't have any problem getting by.
You don't?
I guess I'm skinny, I guess.
Gee, you must be like rail thin.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, actually, if you just go up close to them and step into one of the rows, they'll push it by for you.
Oh, usually, well, that's clever. I'll get up more often now.
Just to be more assertive. Yeah.
You have some suggestions for how to make your flight comfortable. For instance, you say drink water instead of carbonated beverages or alcohol.
Yes, that's right. There are a lot of things about what you consume on a plane, you know, that have to do with the unusual environment, a very unsafe environment of the atmosphere of planes. Because of the air is taken in from above the clouds, there's very little moisture in the air in the plane, and so it's very dry. Usually 2 to 5% humidity, and most of that comes from people perspiring and also breathing out moisture from their lungs. So you want to take things that don't dehydrate you, and that means avoiding salt and avoiding diuretics like coffee or tea, which make you want to go to the bathroom, make you want to urinate, and it's also a problem because you want to have to keep getting up all the time. In addition, the other major problem with cabin is there's very low pressure, and so you want to avoid things which will bloat you up, like carbonated beverages. You also want to avoid chewing gum, because when you chew gum, you swallow a lot of air, and that bloats you up. Your stomach will expand to maybe 20% bigger than it normally is.
Gee, I've always chewed gum to help my ears, to help the pressure in my ears.
It certainly does do it. There are a lot of ways to stop the pressure in your ears. Some of the weirder ones I've seen, which actually work, to get styrofoam cups and put hot towels in them and then stick them over your ears. And a lot of people find that works. But really the ultimate way to do it to unpop your ears is what's called a Valsalva maneuver. Valsalva. And that's what's used by scuba divers when they go undersea. And they, of course, achieve a lot greater changes of pressure than you'll get in an airplane. And basically it's simply grabbing the nose, pinching the nostril, and blowing softly with greater and greater pressure until your ear pops. And if one ear pops, then you hold... you release the pressure in one nostril, the opposite nostril, and blow until that other ear pops.
When you're flying, do you choose your flight according to the safety of the airplane or the safety of your seat within the plane?
No.
Why not? With all the plane crashes we've been seeing, why not?
Well, even with all the plane crashes that you've seen, the chances of dying in a plane crash are on any departure that you take are less than 1 in a million. On average, you're more likely to have been struck by lightning in the last 10 years than to have died in a plane crash. So it's really not worth worrying about. If you do like to worry about things, though, there's certainly certain seats that are safer than others. If you're concerned about dying on impact, then being at the back of the plane is statistically safer. If you're concerned about dying in turbulence, then you, you know, breaking your head on the ceiling, then you want to sit over the wing. If you're afraid about being sucked out the door, you'll sit away from the door. If you're afraid about dying of smoke inhalation in a plane, you want to sit next to the door so you can get out, you know. So basically, when you get on the plane, you decide how you want to die, and you choose a seat accordingly. But I don't think it's worth worrying about.
So you don't go for a plane with a better safety record or one, you know, a plane that didn't crash last week?
No. In fact, I tend to go for those planes for two reasons.
Oh, no one will be sitting next to you, right?
That's right. Well, three reasons now. I forgot that one. That's right. They're less crowded. Secondly, they'll drop the price. You know, when DC-10s are attacked, immediately all the prices are dropped, so you can get it really cheaply.
Is that true? Do they do that?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, in order to attract people in. After Lockerbie, Pan Am fares were exceedingly cheap. I just flew over from London, and I flew on Kuwait Air. And people don't fly Kuwait because it's third world, and because the Iranians are always threatened to bomb it because they're holding a bunch of fundamentalist prisoners there. So, you get really very, very inexpensive flights there.
Uh-huh.
So I don't worry about it. Oh, the other reason is I think that when these happen, they immediately start looking at them much more closely, and they're more heavily inspected than any other plane. So you're a lot better off.